Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
When the sky is dark and the moon aglow and the morning star burning from afar enters into view, all that I can say, all that I can.
Yes, that is the theme song, my friends, for the always scintillating story time segment on the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. And I promised you something last week. We talked about my hippie days. That was, and we called that segment part one of I Was a Teenage Hippie. And today is part two of I Was a Teenage Hippie, the early days. And I told you about my hippie days last week. I shared a few of my thoughts about that era and about going to coffee houses and protests and the drugs and the free love. But what I did not share with you was the special role my mother played in my decision to become a flower child. For strangely enough, my proper English mother unknowingly sowed the seeds of my rebellion when I was only 14 years old and in the ninth grade. And I'm going to tell you that story. In the ninth grade, I was not a very popular kid. I had some friends, and that was good, but I wanted to be popular with the most attractive, socially adept, and coolest kids. Now, that was how I envisioned them anyway. In all likelihood, they were just insecure, anxious, apprehensive children like me, but I didn't see them that way. So when one of the cutest girls in the school, who was on the fringes of cooldom, as I understood it, asked me to a party at her house, it was a big deal. Her name was Edith. I wasn't invited to be her date. I was just one of the invitees. But it was still a very momentous thing for me. One could assume that at the party, the cool people would be there, and that this might be my entree into the exalted circles of ninth grade coolness. My mother was excited, too, because she was an intensely social creature. And she wanted me to be a social creature, too. She wanted me to be socially successful like her. And this invitation was validation that, contrary to all previous indications, I could be socialized. However, this party presented a special challenge because it was a party with a theme. It was to be a beatnik party. And the idea was that we would all go dressed up as beatniks. Now, in ninth grade, my perception of beatniks was that they smoked cigarettes, played bongo drums, and read obscure poetry to each other. Oddly enough, I already owned some bongo drums, so my idea of a costume was to dress up like I regularly did, but to bring my bongo drums. And maybe I do a little beat drum solo at the party. You know, I had this vision of that. My mother would have none of it. If I was to go to a beatnik party, I would need to fully dress the part, and she would see to that. Here is the outfit that my mother bought me. First, we got a pair of blue and white striped beachcombers. The stripes were fat, and they ran up and down my leg. If you don't know what beachcombers are pedal pushers for men. Sometimes they're called clam diggers. If you don't know what clam diggers or pedal pushers are, imagine tight unisex pants that end just below the knee. I do not know where my mother got the idea that beatniks wore women's clothes or that they had a special affinity for clams, but that was her worldview, and at 14, I was still under her thumb. Then she got me a tight black t-shirt with a boat neck. If you don't know what a boat neck is, imagine a t-shirt with a high, wide slit for a neck that follows the curve of your collarbone. By the way, if you wear a dark boat neck shirt, it looks like your head is popping out of a shark's mouth. Then she got me some blue and white flip-flops to match the color of the wide stripes in the beachcombers. Plus, she got me a black beret. And then to top it all off, I was to have a fake candy cigarette dangling from my mouth and carry my bongo drums. If you have the image in your mind of a white ninth grade Harry Belafonte, fresh off the banana boat, dressed in women's clothes and a black beret with a candy cigarette and bongo drums, you have got the picture. In all honesty, I remember thinking that I looked pretty cool. I thought I looked like the ultimate beatnik, when in truth I actually looked like an escapee from a mental institution in Marseille. On the day of the event, I was dropped off at the party at a fancy house in the Tony suburbs of North Seattle. Edith's house was quite nice, and it had a view of Lake Washington. I was the first boy to arrive. There were about five or six girls there, and they were all dressed in black dresses or skirts and black leotards. Some of them had colorful headbands, and a few wore dark sunglasses. There were candles burning, and there were snacks laid out. A few more girls arrived, but I was still the only guy. At the time, I wasn't socially adept, so I didn't know what to say, and for some reason, no one asked me to play my bongo drums. Then, about 1 hour into the affair, 1 hour into this very uncomfortable affair, the other guys arrived. And yes, they were the cool guys from school. They arrived in a pack that I was conspicuously not part of. And most upsetting of all, none of them were wearing costumes. It was immediately clear to me that cool guys do not wear costumes to costume parties. Cool guys do not wear pedal pushers and boat neck shirts. Cool guys do not smoke fake candy cigarettes, and they certainly do not walk around brandishing bongo drums. And the cool guys do not speak to idiots that do. I felt painfully wrong, and I was stricken by how ungroovy I was. If I could have taken off my pedal pushers right then and there, I would have, but a beatnik in underpants would have been even worse. Luckily, the guys did not stay for long. Apparently, cool guys come to dumb parties like this, eat most of the snacks, and then they leave. That was some sort of relief, except there I was with the girls again, feeling socially awkward and feeling like I was the one guy who did not know the rules of the game. I did not talk again to Edith, the gal who threw the party, for 14 years. We bumped into each other at our 10th high school reunion. She said hello and I asked her how was she doing. She immediately began lamenting the fact that so few of the intelligentsia had chosen to come to the reunion. I think that was the club she assumed that she and I were part of, the ninth grade intelligentsia dating all the way back to the beatnik party. I found her comment quite odd. So now you know why I blame my mother for me becoming a hippie. By dressing me up like a beatnik in the ninth grade and letting me go to coffee houses in the 10th and 11th grade, she signaled parental approval for an alternative lifestyle. Yet somehow when I joined the hippie movement, she was shocked and surprised. Clearly, she could not see her own part in this most natural evolution. Well, my mom is in heaven now, and she is probably listening to this on the great celestial radio. And Mom, I want to assure you that in the end, everything turned out to be okay. Except for this radio show, which is heard by dozens of just judgmental and disapproving people, I live a reputable life, and I do not blame you in the least for my past errors. I think you and I are both forgiven. I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.